Can you dig it? We are about to go live with our Warriors review. I have my good friend Zoe here from the Backlook Cinema podcast. Going ahead, give him a warm welcome. He's the legend, he's the myth, he's everything that you want in a podcast movie reviewer. So let's go ahead, let's welcome the myth, legend, Zoe himself to the show. Let's do this, guy. And hey, Zoe, how are you?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
I'm doing fantastic on this lovely night. So, welcome back to the show. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a while. It's good to be back. And it was a bumpy road getting here. And I was fighting to do this show because it's like there were certain circumstances. My schedule kept getting changed and whatnot. I was like, man, I hope John doesn't cancel.
No, of course not, man. Of course not. I would never do that to you. As a matter of fact, I would actually have to say that the theme of this movie actually fits in with how we were fighting to get to this show, just as they were trying to get to Coney Island. So I think it's very it works out perfectly.
Absolutely, absolutely.
But so I know that you haven't seen this film until you told me, hey, look, let's try and review The Warriors, right?
Yes, I have not seen that movie, and I've heard so much about it. And there's so many things that are in our culture, that's in the media. It's its own meme. So the meme's been going around since, I guess, the 1970s. And so I'm familiar with the memes, but I've never actually fully connected it to the film. And so I was able to watch the film, and I understood the memes, and I get it. And I was like, okay, so now there's actually a fairly decent video game that came out of the movie. And so that video game came out for the PS3.
PS2, I think. I'm not mistaken. Yeah. 2002.
Yeah, PS2, PS3, because I have seen it for a while, and it's always been on a list of video games. Like, whenever they're promoting a bunch of video games, The Warriors is always on the list. I was like, well, this must be a special kind of movie, because Rockstar is the studio that produced that game.
And oh, wow, it's I didn't know that.
Yeah, and it's got pretty decent reviews. I'm like, well, perhaps I should check this movie out then. This must have some cultural significance. And I got to tell you, it was wild. It was a wild ride.
I have to say this. This is actually my first time seeing it as well. So my nostalgia for the rating, normally I do a nostalgia rating, which is best out of 10, is going to be an NA for me as well. So that's how I'm going to stand on it as a nostalgia. I remember seeing memes and stuff like that too. I remember working at Movie Gallery and seeing the video game on the shelf. And I get this. As a kid, I would think that I would actually see this movie on VHS. Browsing through the sections, I don't remember seeing the Warriors ever being on the shelf or anything as a kid. Then again, I was also into other things, but still, I would always remember videotapes as I passed, and I never remember seeing any type of VHS tape for this.
Right, right. I don't know. I never looked for it. I think I was aware of it. I think I knew that it was a movie. There was a movie called The Warriors, but it was never something that I had an urgent need to see. I was simply aware of it, but not trying to see it. But I did decide to try to get the video game. So a couple of days ago, I started browsing. At first, I was looking for physical copies. And the physical copies of the games are like, there's a PSP version, and I think you can get that for like $40 or $50. But if you try to get like a PlayStation 3 version or PlayStation 2 version or an Xbox, I think it's the very first Xbox. If you try to get that version, those can be between $75 and $100. And I was I don't know. I don't know if I want to spend that money. And then I realized that there's probably a digital copy on a PlayStation store. And indeed there was, and indeed I got it. And I started playing it, and it plays pretty decently. It's a standard beat 'em up, but I've only played like the tutorial levels, so I'll have to get back to you on how the game actually is.
Okay, I'm gonna have to download it now that you told me that it's on digital for the PS5 now. Now I'm gonna have to download that now.
Where it's PS4. You can play PS4. It on the PS5, but it's a little glitchy playing a PS4 game on PS5. It's not something that is going to affect gameplay, I don't think, but you'll notice the glitches.
Okay, sounds good. So let's go ahead. We're going to talk a little bit about the development of this movie, going on a little bit of trivia, and then from there we'll do our scene-by-scene breakdown of this. So development was with the film rights to Soy Gorick's novel, were bought in 1969 by American International Pictures, but no film resulted from it. Rights were then obtained by producer Lawrence Gordon, who commissioned David Schaber to write the script. Gordon sent the script to director Walter Hill with a copy of Sol Yorick's novel. He recalls, "I said, Larry, I would love to do this, but nobody will let us do it. It was going to be too extreme and too weird." So Gordon and Hill were originally going to make a Western, but when the financing on the project failed to materialize, they took the Warriors to Paramount Pictures because they were interested in youth films at the time and succeeded in getting the project financed. Hill was drawn to the extreme narrative, simplicity, and stripped-down quality of the script. The script, as written, was realistic take on street gangs, but the director was a huge fan of comic books and wanted to divide the film into chapters and then have each chapter come to life, starting with a splash panel. However, Hill was working on a low budget and tight post-production schedule because of a fixed release date, as the studio wanted to release The Warriors before a rival gang picture called The Wanderers. As a result, he was unable to realize that the comic book look until the making of the ultimate director's cut. So what did you think about the little bit of the trivia from that?
That's fascinating. I only recently found out that it was actually from a novel. And it's funny that you mentioned that they were fans of comic books and they wanted to put comic books elements in there. And when you watch the movie, it's like, oh yeah, I can see the comic book elements in there. There was some mention of how they wanted it to be like a realistic depiction of gangs, but this is not a realistic depiction of gangs.
No, it's definitely not. Far from it. Here's another interesting fact, though. So, I mean, I don't know if you knew this or not either, but there was a Stanley, the director who made The Shining, right?
Yeah.
Anyways, his movie got banned for The Clockwork Orange because it was gang related.
Ah, I didn't know about that.
So get this. This is the second movie to get banned for gang violence.
Oh, it got banned? I didn't know. Yeah, who banned it?
Like, the movie theaters wouldn't even play it or anything.
I did not know about that.
Yeah, I actually looked it up a little bit more deeper into it. So I thought that was kind of fascinating. Like, you have two movies within the same year that got banned for the same thing.
Oh, wow. That's fascinating. I didn't know that it was banned from theaters. I knew about the movie. So I don't know how I knew about the movie. It must have played on TV or whatnot. And I can understand, though, because around that time, like around 1970s and 60s or whatnot, they really wanted to push like a moral narrative. Like, you know, your good guys have to actually act good. I mean, this stems from like earlier like restrictions in Hollywood and whatnot. So I can see how that kind of still had a residue of that stiffiness, you know, about, you know, morality in the 1970s still hanging on. So these gangs aren't good. Like, these aren't good guys. Like, not even the titular gang, the Warriors, they're not good guys, right?
So they're not. It's hard to root for these guys. You're rooting for a gang members to succeed going into Coney Island to hopefully beat down another gang member the whole entire night.
They're just trying to get home, right? So you're rooting for them to try to get home, and you're rooting for like some sort of justice because they're falsely accused of doing something that they didn't do. So you're like, you're kind of invested in that rudimentary sense of justice. But at the same time, like, you have the adversarial game, the rogues, and you see them doing bad stuff. So it gets you emotionally invested to have them get their comeuppance. But then with the Warriors, because you don't actually see the gang actually doing gang related stuff, you kind of root for them. But they're a gang, so this is the type of stuff they do. The type of things that the rogues do is exactly the type of thing that the Warriors do. So
exactly,
we just don't see the Warriors as usual. Right, we just don't see the Warriors do it because we're supposed to be rooting for them. So we, you know, that's not the story that the director wants to tell. So
right,
that's how that goes.
And you did mention the comic book aspect of it. I did notice it during watching this. It does have a comic book aspect to it that is very fascinating with it. And you know what, though? It could actually be John Wick before John Wick became John Wick, if you think about it. Because of the way that certain things were, especially if you get into like John Wick Chapter 2 with the mythology around the way the lore is. And even they use the word parlay in The Warriors. And just as John Wick also used parlay. But we'll get into a little bit of the other John Wick-isms when it comes down to this movie, because there is a couple of more that I picked up on and how they borrowed and paid homage to The Warriors, which I found really fascinating with it. But yeah, okay. So now that we talked about this, gave you guys a little bit of the trivia, and even though we're NA on nostalgia, now we're going to go the scene-by-scene breakdown of this. So in a world where street gangs ruled the night, one gang was framed, and now they must fight their way back to Coney Island. John and Zoe has to go on ahead and tell you guys that they're on a very dangerous mission to try to get all the way to Coney Island by giving you a review of The Warriors.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Only if there's a popcorn and zero chance of running into baseball furies. This week we're hoping on the Midnight Train of Mayhem to review the cult classic, The Warriors, the movie that made leather vests cool and running through New York City in the middle of the night somehow look fun. We're breaking it down with Cyrus' iconic speech to the awkward subway stare down scene that still makes me clutch my vest like pearls. And yes, we're finally answer the question, was that guy really going to take on 9 gang members with a glass bottle?
Warriors, come out to play. Warriors, come out to play.
Let's get weird, wild, and maybe a little sweaty. It's time to for another episode of Movie Television Night and Backlook Cinema. It's more dangerous than taking the wrong train out of the Bronx. Let's do this. So, scene one.
Nice.
Thank you. I do appreciate it. I've been preparing for this for a little bit. So, Cyrus, the leader of the most powerful gang in New York City, the Germany Rifts, calls a midnight summit for all the area gangs, with all asked to send 9 unarmed representatives for the conclave in Van Park. The Warriors from Coney Island, Brooklyn, are one such gang. So, and then you also have the equivalent intelligent Cyrus tells the assembled crowd that a permanent citywide truce would allow the gangs to control the city, pointing out there are 60,000 of them and only 20,000 officers in the NYPD. Most of the gangs laud his idea, but members of the Rogues gang have smuggled the gun in, passed to their leader, Luther, who then kills Cyrus. Panic ensures Luther is seen in the act by one of the Warriors, Fox. Immediately after, the NYPD rushes in from all the sides. During the chaos, Luther screams that the Warriors are responsible for killing Cyrus, while the Rifts beat and kill the Warriors' leader, Cleon. The other 8 Warriors escape the melee and debate their next move, knowing they are deep in enemy territory. So the opening scene for Mizo was like this. It's like you get to see Cyrus for the first time, and everybody is there with the speech. I could just see him like as a representative for this gang, and then his other gang members are like, "Hey, Cyrus, you know you have to do a speech later on, right?" "Yeah, I know. Usually I do Can You Dig It? But I don't think I want to do Can You Dig It tonight." "I think you should do that, man. I think you should really do Can You Dig It." "Well, I don't want to do Can You Dig It because everybody's expecting that." He's like, "You know what? I think I'm just going to go Can You Dig It." So he goes over to the crowd. He gives the speech. "Can you dig it?" "Nah, they're not digging." "Can you dig it?" So that got the crowd going. I could just see him as like a political person. And then someone next to him was like, "Hey, Cyrus, you know, you still got it, man. You're still doing it. You're doing really good. You got the people. You got them. You got the gangs." But what did you think of the opening?
or the opening. The movie like starts off right away. What's funny is that the video game starts off exactly like the movie, how they have the intersparts, the credits with the words discussing how they're going to get to the, you know, if they should even attend this meeting that they've been invited to, and rumors that all the gangs are going to be there. And then you have Ajax, played by Remar. He's like saying, I bet there's not going to be anybody that's going to be there. Very, very typical of a gang member. He almost seems like he's in the wrong gang. He loves saying the F word.
Right. And that's one thing I have to say with this movie is I don't really care for the F word too much on this. He has like about several, and it's hard for me to even root for him when he's saying all those words, you know what I mean?
I don't even think you're supposed to be rooting for him. I think that's why he's saying it. He's like, he's right. Of the Warriors, he's probably the worst. And so it kind of threw me aback. And then I have to remember that this movie came out in 1979. So it's kind of like it reminds you of a B movie or maybe even a blaxploitation movie where this is the language that you're going to hear. So I had to put myself in that mindset in order to, you know, watch the movie. But he was, you could see the immaturity in his speech and in his attitude and whatnot. He's very dumb. So anyways, there's that. And the thing, like, even before you get to the speech, you see the different gangs in the credits. It's like, what is going on here? Right. Like, you got the pimp gang. Who's this baseball gang? It's like, what gang dresses in baseball? It's like, oh, I realized that. Oh, I'm watching a fantasy because they got these guys dressed in this is supposed to be a gang, but they're dressed as baseball players. And then you have this a mime gang, a gang. There's a bunch of other just weirdly dressed people. You got some people in some people almost look like they're wearing like almost regular clothes, but it's like a uniform. So everybody's wearing black shirts, or you got another group, then they're all wearing denim overalls. You know, like it is
definitely very fantasy-esque. You're right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like it's from a comic book. So that took me a little getting used to. That took me aback. I was like, hey, wait a minute. This ain't how gangs act. Right.
Right. Because we have the punks. Right. Go on ahead.
Right. And then they get to where everybody's at the speech, and you got Cyrus going up, and he's talking about the numbers. Can you count, suckers? Right? He's talking about how that we got a truce with all the gangs, that there are so many gangs here, and it's like they could take over the entire city instead of fighting over a little bit of turf. They could, the whole city could be their collective turf, and they can basically make everybody pay taxes to them. So right. And all the gangs are really jazzed up about it. And so he does it, this iconic speech, and then he does his saying, can you dig it? Can you dig it? I was like, there it is. I've seen it for the first time. I've heard people say it all this time, and now for the first time, I'm seeing it in the actual movie. And it's funny, right? Because you had mentioned that Booker T was
That's like the very first time I heard.
Yeah, that's the first time I ever heard it too. But I figured it was something that everybody says. Like, you know, you see in,
I thought it was something he made up himself. I'm like, okay, I like that. Can you dig it? It just sticks with you. And
well, I think it's a combination, because like I've heard people say, can you dig this? Can you dig that? Like, you hear it on like what you call it, Good Times or the Jeffersons or something like that. I've heard that expression, can you dig it? Or he should dig this, or I hope he digs this, or whatever. I've heard that. But it's his combination, like Booker T specifically says, can you dig it, sucker? And like when you put those together, it's like, oh, you can see how he got this from the Warriors.
Exactly, because as soon as I heard Cyrus do this, I'm like, okay, I'm getting Booker T vibes right now from the early days of WWE, because I used to watch WWE back in the early 2000s, and that was like peak WWE for me. And I'm like, okay, I'm invested in this character, not just because of Booker T, but because of the fact that this guy who is well-grounded and is wanting the best for these gangs and to not cause harm to each other. But yet you have some idiot that comes in there with a gun, and then it just ruins it for everybody. And this whole, it's like a peace treaty among other leaders, which is something I really like. And I also like how the Warriors are all having this conversation about the fact that they're having this meeting and they're not sure if anyone's going to show up or not. They're thinking that they might be the only ones, because it seems like the Warriors are the only ones that have Cyrus's back. It seems like, you know, Warriors are like, you know what? Cyrus is a good dude. Yeah, he's a good dude, man. He's just trying to look out for all of us. Okay, yeah. So
I think most of the other gangs there appreciated what Cyrus was doing and it was down for it. I think it was really that one individual from the Rogues that, like, right. Him, that dude from the Rogues, and Ajax,
yeah,
James Remar character, because everybody's clapping and he's kind of like grinting on he's grinting on Cyrus. It's like he's not down with all of this, you know, togetherness with the other gangs. He doesn't like it at all.
No, he wants everything. It's like Yankees and Red Sox, right, where he wants everything to be, you know, rivalries and stuff. We shouldn't be getting along. We don't need it.
Right.
And I think it's also the fact too, this is me thinking, like, well, they could backstab us at any moment or whatever, so why should we trust them? Like, I get the fact that Cyrus has good intentions, but at the same time, though, should we be trusting the opposing side as well? So it's making them question their own, you know, individuality in a sense.
Yeah. There are definitely some trust issues.
But I do like the fact that we have the punks, we have the Turnbull ACs, we also have the Grimacy Riffs, the punks, like I mentioned. Then we have the Lizzies, the Rogues, Baseball Furies, Hurricanes, the Orphans, the Boppers.
Yeah, let's not forget about the Orphans.
Oh, yeah. Can't forget about them. It seems like everybody forgets about them, right? We'll get to that in a few minutes. But yeah, they have a huge amount of, I like the whole entire mythology around each gang, where you could probably, and I don't blame them for wanting to try to do something if this actually turned into something bigger, where you'd wind up having like separate comic books, for example, right? Like issue one would be the Warriors, issue two, which would be movie number two, be centered around another gang and how they do things and stuff. So I would love to see a story like that. If this movie was actually successful during that time.
Yeah, I can see how you could really expand this universe. Like, I think the one thing that it has in common with John Wick that's really strong is it has this strong mythological element around, basically, it's like a type of element in society that we're familiar with. This is gangs and gang culture. And they kind of expanded it into this massive mythology about gangs and gang culture, the same way that John Wick has kind of expanded something, or even given a culture to, like, assassin culture.
Right, exactly.
if it could be said that there's a assassin culture or a hitman culture, that John Wick has developed that for its franchise. So that's what The Warriors does. It develops this huge fantasy about what gangs could be like in this movie.
Exactly. The thing that I want to talk about, though, too, is, like, you have the rogue member that winds up shooting Cyrus, which is Luther, and he to me is, like, the most over the top and most annoying character in this movie. Like, my wife came in, and we'll talk about the ending later, a little bit later, but she came in at the part where he's over there with the bottles. And goes, Warriors, Warriors. She goes, I wish someone would already kill him already.
Yeah, I think he wants to be annoying. What's interesting about that part, since you brought it up, is that that is part of the meme is that particular taunt. And I heard a version of that taunt on a Bad Boys record where somebody's going, Bad Boys, come out and play. And I had no idea where that was from. I thought that they made it up. And it was only when I saw this movie, I was like, oh, that's where they got it from. They got it from this movie. Oh, no, I think maybe I've heard Warriors come out and play someplace else. So maybe I didn't think that that's it came from Bad Boys. But still,
I think it came out in Bad Boys 2, though. I want to say it was Bad Boys 2 with the Jamaicans.
Oh, did they say? I'm talking about the music. It was a song.
Oh, the music. Okay, my bad. I was actually thinking Will Smith. Okay,
no. I forgot the name of the song, but it was actually more of a, it was like a, not a remake. It was a, what do you call it?
Like a cover?
It's like an, Yeah, it was either a cover or an interpolation of a previous song. And that's how the song starts off. It starts off with somebody, probably a convicted felon going, a famous convicted felon. At least, no, he's not convicted yet, but he will be.
Right, exactly.
and he's going, bad boys, come out and play. And then they start the song and whatever. But yeah, so that's an example of one of the memes that exists because of this movie.
Okay. So we're going to go, I want to actually go a little bit of on a fan theory thing that I found, and people love our fan theories. I'm just going to tell you that people on TikTok really love our fan theories. I mean that jokingly and sarcastically because they can't stand it. But so this is what I've read on Reddit. It said, those of you that have seen the film think that maybe the police had Cyrus knocked off so that the gangs wouldn't unite. And the first reason I'm thinking is because the cops show up in force right before the revolver is seen being passed through the crowd to the real killer. Second at multiple times throughout the movie, you see the killer on the phone passing and receiving information with an unknown source. Afterward, several police show up exactly where the Warriors just happen to be on the subway. So that's actually a little bit of fan theory.
That's a good theory. It makes sense. It adds another layer to the story if that's what actually happened. If there was like some kind of cooperation between the police and one of the gangs, and they were able to help facilitate smuggling the gun in, or even maybe they didn't even do that much. Maybe one of the rogues had tipped off the police that there was going to be a murder or something going down. I mean, it's not too far off the pale. It's not a far-fetched fan theory. I think that works.
I think so too. So let's go on ahead. Let's talk about this part now. Meanwhile, the other local based gangs regroup at their respective headquarters. Massey, second in command of the Rifts, takes charge as their new leader and declares a bounty on the Warriors. This sets the entire city's gang population out hunting for them, with a seemingly omniscient radio DJ reporting on the events. So this is the part that I was telling about in the emails, though, where it feels like John Wick Chapter 4, because they actually have a DJ in John Wick Chapter 4, and she's actually putting a hit on John Wick as she's doing this whole entire DJ thing. And this also, and it pays homage to the Warriors. And I think it's kind of cool to have this kind of thing where you actually have a DJ putting out the hit, and she's actually putting on a record to emulate the hit on somebody. So I thought that was pretty cool to have. It's like kind of a, and she has such a soothing kind of voice to where I'm like, okay, girl, I'm enthused with you. Okay. And I really like that. And of course, during the making of it, she didn't know that they were only going to film her lips or anything. So they used her whole face. But when they did was they went on ahead and just filmed from her lips and everything. And
they cropped her lips.
Yeah. And I like it, though. It leaves a little bit of a mystery element as to who she is, just as we are listening to her on the radio. And it makes me wonder, like, does hitmen or gang members have their own radio station to where they just, if you put the dial just right, you could actually get this radio station and hearing this DJ put a hit on people. I was enthused with that. And then, you know, then you're wondering too, how, now that there's this hit out, how are the Warriors even going to survive this? And the Warriors actually trying to figure this out as we are trying to try and figure this out, to try and get them home. And I was really on the edge of my seat with this, because everyone's a gang at this point at night. And the most scariest time to be out in New York is at night, where everything is supposed to be dark. It's not as friendly as it is during the daytime. It's the unknown of the darkness and what's going to get you. And there's just something haunting and menacing about it.
Well, especially at this time in the 1979, 1980s, the early 80s, New York was had a reputation for being a very dangerous place. And so you had gangs, you had muggings constantly. It was, people didn't necessarily feel safe, especially in certain neighborhoods. So yeah, that That makes sense. And I couldn't wait for you to get to talk about the DJ because I recognize those lips anyway. It's like she's close crop. It's like, so you can't, you're like, you're not supposed to know who she is. But I was like, and I hadn't seen John Wick before, so I was not able to make that connection with the DJs. But when I saw, when I first saw it, I was like, here's the thing, right? When I was watching the movie, I knew that James Remar was in it. So I'm watching it because I'm looking for James Remar. And I didn't recognize him because he's so young. The only thing I recognized was his voice. And then I kind of recognized his lips because he has, I can recognize his lips. I don't know how else to put that. It's like, so I was able to put two and two together, and with the voice and the shape of his lips, I was like, yeah, that's James Remar. But when I saw the DJ and I saw some more lips, I recognized that mouth anywhere. It's like, do you recognize the mouth?
No, I didn't. Who is that?
You didn't know? You ever watched Carmen Sandiego?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the chief, the black woman who plays, I don't know, is she a chief in that show?
I think she's like she's the always chief of it. That's what I'm going to call her.
That's her. It's she's the chief in Carmen Sandiego was the DJ in The Warriors. And I looked it up on IMDb to confirm it. Her name is Lion Figpen. She was also on Lean On Me. She was the antagonistic parent on Lean On Me. Her child got kicked out of school. So she's antagonizing the school district because of the changes that the principal Joe Clark is doing. And she's been around. She's been on television stuff. But those are the two things that are on top of mind that she's been in. And I was like, it's just that she has a very unique shape to her mouth. And when I saw the mouth come on screen, I was like, I know that mouth.
I know that mouth. I can see you like a police line mouth. Sir, can you go on ahead and put blindfold every single one of these women? And I need to see their lips. Yep, that's her. That's the one.
Yeah. Yeah, that's Lyanne. I know that mouth.
But so, I just love it. I'm enthused with it. I like the song that she puts on there as well for the hit. It just works. Everything about this is atmospheric and cinematic to me for this type of time of movie.
I think that she's affiliated with the main gang. You had mentioned it before, but it escapes my mind. The Cliff, what's the main gang that's trying to kill the Warriors? Cyrus's gang.
The Rogues?
No, not the Rogues. Cyrus is the... I put it in my notes too.
Cleon.
Not the Furies, not Riffs. The Mimes, not the Pimps. Riffs, there we go.
Yeah, there you go, Riffs. The Riffs. Sorry about that. I got jumbled up in my own notes. Yeah, but yeah, the Riffs.
So I think she's affiliated with the Riffs and I think she's a regular DJ. She's on a regular network, and she's speaking in codes to the gang. So the gangs know what she's talking about, but anybody else listening in don't really know what she's talking about. Maybe they think that she's putting on a skit or something like that, but they don't understand. But the gangs know, because like when you listen to her, it sounds like she's speaking in codes. Like, we got these fellas that they're going home, and they need to be stopped, right?
Right. They need to be stopped. And this one goes out to you, Warriors.
Yeah. This one goes out to you, Warriors. I feel like she's speaking in code, but she's not, so it's not obvious to all the other listeners to that who are listening in on that radio station.
Right. I like the fact that it's Nowhere to Run, which is perfect. That fits in with the theme of it. I can see us listening to that. It's like, who's the Warriors? Why do you have this song playing? Why is there Nowhere to Run? I'll be questioning my own insecurities at this point. It was like, wait. Why is this woman talking in code? What's going on here? You know?
Right, right. Well, that's for her to know and you to find out.
Exactly. But yeah, I thought it was a really good scene. And then we had the regrouping in Woodlawn Cemetery. The Warriors began their long journey from the Bronx back to Coney Island. The second-in-command Swan takes charge through the hot-headed Ajax, open voices, desire to be acting... gang warlord. The warrior slowly across the dangerous Bronx and Manhattan territories, nearly escaping police and other gangs every step of the way. So you have that long police chase inside the, I think that's before that though, right? Where you actually have this long police chase and they're chasing him down through the whole entire subway station. I think that's a little later.
But yeah, that's later. The initial police chase is when they arrive at the conclave and they're chasing all the gang members off. It's not quite enough police to deal with all the gangs. I think most of them get away. And actually, the leader, the warlord of the warriors that had brought their representative to the meeting, he had got pinched by police. Like the Luther had pointed at him saying, it's the warriors did it. The warriors killed Cyrus. And then the other gangs, like, I think it was Cyrus gang, actually, they started beating up on him. Like at first, you know, he was holding his own pretty good. And then it was like, it's just too many gang members. And then he gets caught up by the police. He's taken out of the picture. And then, and then a police chased the warriors a little bit, but that didn't last too long.
No. And then we also have the baseball furies that are chasing them down too later on. But yeah, not that many police are on the tail or anything either. I just like the confrontation between them. Like there's no escaping this night at all. And the whole entire theme of this is them trying to survive this night. And trying to figure out how to get to point A to point B without getting killed, or one of them getting killed, if not all of them getting killed.
Right.
But then, you know, there was also this other thing too I wanted to talk to you about as well. Is like, you see one of the warriors hitting on this one woman, and he goes,
"Oh, that's where, that's later. That's
later on.
Is that Ajax you're talking about?"
Yeah, Ajax is the one that's trying to
hitting on the woman on the bench.
Yeah. He, but we'll talk about that.
That's a very loose definition of hitting on.
Right. I'm putting it lightly right now before I describe the scene. But on their way to Subway, the warrior finds another gang, the Turnbull ACs, looking for them. They have no choice but to make a run to the train. The Turnbull ACs almost reach them, but the warriors make it to the train just in time for the doors to close. However, on the ride back to Coney Island, the train is stopped by a fire on the tracks, dumping the warriors and Tremont on the Bronx. In the Bronx, they come across a gang called the Orphans, paralyzing for safe passage. The warriors convince the Orphans to let them through peacefully until they come across Mercy, a feisty girl who convinces the Orphans to try and put up a fight with the warriors. When they refuse to give her one of their gang's best, when she challenges the manhood of the Orphans' leaders, E2's safe face tells the warriors to remove their gang colors for safe passage. The warriors refuse, resulting in a rare fight quelled only by the warriors' use of motor oil cocktail. Mercy impressed follows the warriors on impulse.
Not much of a fight, really. It was like the warriors, like, F you, we're gonna walk through your territory anyway. And so they started walking through, and the Orphans went and got the reinforcements. And then when the reinforcements showed up, there's like 30 of them. That's basically their whole gang. And then the warriors threw a Molotov cocktail at a car and ran off. And that was basically, both gangs ran off. It caused the car to explode. The Orphans ran one way, and the warriors ran another way to get to the subway station. And that was the end of that. So no real fight took place, just a lot of, you know, boisterous intimidation. And the other thing was that I liked the parlay, because I liked the character of the Orphans. Like, they want to be big shots, but they're not. They're small fry. Like, every time you hear them described, like when other people are talking about them, like when the DJ is talking about them, or when the other gangs are talking about them, talking about them, how they're such small fries and barely noticeable. And they weren't invited. They weren't invited to the conclave, right? They were one of the gangs that, one of the affiliates, or one of the unorganized that Cyrus had mentioned that didn't make it to the conclave because they weren't big enough, they weren't noticeable enough. But these guys are so, well, they want to be important. They self-conscious because they're not important enough. They're not big enough. So they carry this newspaper clipping about something, some gang-related activity that they did to prove how big and bad that they are, right? So it's like, and then, like, what's his name? The guy besides, I forget everybody's name. the guy that was next to Swan, he was saying, yeah, you guys are pretty good. You didn't get invited to the conclave. That's because maybe they're afraid of you. You know, he's like, he understood them and he was buttering up their ego. So and all they wanted to do was get to the subway station. So he's just buttering up the ego. They're just trying to get along to get along. And then this woman comes out and just messes everything up because they had it. They had it in the bag. And then she just tried to screw everything up. She's like Luther in that way. Mm-hmm. Like just messing things up just because she can. And I think the lesson in this movie, the thing that this movie is trying to teach us, is that women are horrible because at every turn in this movie, they mess up your plans. They set in a trap for you. They get you pinched. They're all traps. Stay away from girls. Stay away from the opposite sex. They are wrong.
Just play with Hot Wheels. You'll be good.
Yeah, they gonna mess you up. That's the message through this entire movie. There's not one woman in this movie that's genuinely helpful, right?
No, because here's the thing. Everybody, even though the Warriors are has a hit out for them, they're still wanting to get laid. So they're therefore they think that they're safe with some women or whatever, and then something winds up happening in that scenario where they wind up getting locked in with these women.
They could get laid when they get home, but they are dumb. They just make dumb decisions, right?
It's like, okay, side quest, let's have sex.
Just right. So not particularly bright. Young and dumb and full of cum, as they say.
Yes. I know that's like, I know that saying very well. But, you know, there's also that scene where they're looking for the safe passage, right? And I also look at this as like the greasers from The Outsiders. I kind of look at Turnbell's ACs like the greasers from that movie because of the way they're dressed. So they kind of look like the greasers for some reason to me. But, you know, that's also another thing, callback to John Wick, is the fact that John Wick was looking for a way out because all these assassins were after him and wanting to kill him. Yeah. So, you know, so that he's looking for safe passage. So he has to use the crucifix to get safe passage from this other woman who has a crucifix as well. So that, and she goes, well, once you do this, you're not going to be able to come back to New York. So she gives him safe passage to go, just as with this part, well, you have to take off your vest. I don't want to take off my cut. You're not going to take off my cut or anything. I don't feel like I need to do that. And then you're right, though, about them pumping their head, the orphans up. It's like, look, man, you're good at what you do. You have the newspaper clipping. We see it. We know you. You're doing good, yeah, man. You're doing real good. Yeah. Keep up the good work. And so it's like, okay, someone's acknowledging us finally. We've been setting up fires. We've been doing other stuff to get people's attention, and finally someone's got us. We're going to probably sign on that dotted line later on. But it's like, okay, we're good to go. We got these guys in the bag. We're going to be able to have safe passage. And then here comes the girl that's going to ruin it all. So, and pretty much C-block them from getting from that safe passage. But I like how they were able to try to use that angle of, okay, they want to take up our cut, but what do they want? Because they weren't invited to Cyrus's meeting. So let's go ahead and use that as leverage to try and figure and basically finagle it around to where we can get safe passage. So I like that idea. But yeah, and then she winds up following, then Mercy winds up following them on impulse. I'm like, what's your MO for this? For just following these group of guys? Like, I get the fact that you might want to have a love interest in this, but none of these guys are good, first of all, but yet you're stuck with this one.
I can understand her wanting the bad boys. I think she's hanging around the orphans because, you know, like, they're bad dudes. And then, like, it her motivations were bothering me too, don't get me wrong, but I have to settle on she just wants the baddest dude, right? So the Warriors proved how bad they were, so now she wants to hang around the Warriors because they're even worse dudes than the Orphans, right? They're, or at least
even badder than the other dudes, right?
Yeah. They're more her style than the Orphans were, because she's goading the Warriors. Because like at first the Orphans was going to let the Warriors go through their territory, and then she's like, "You're just going to let them walk through? If you let them walk through, just any old gang would walk through. You're just going to let them do that? What are you? You're not even a man anymore, right?" She's emasculating them after making this peace deal. She wants to emasculate the guy from making a peace deal and not really seeing the value in a peaceful conduct. So, yeah, she's instigating a fight. And then she basically runs off with the people who won the fight. So that's her deal, I guess.
Right. Because it was like another gang or whatever, and those guys were a bit bigger and badder than the Warriors, she would be over there with them.
Right.
And like, and you guys can have your safe passage. I'm going to go with them.
Right. And actually, I should have recognized her, but I didn't. So the actor that plays Mercy is Deborah Van Valkenburgh. And I should have recognized her because I've seen just about every episode of Too Close for Comfort, and she was a star in that show. she was one of the daughters.
Okay, you see, you're better at this than I am, because I didn't know hardly any of the actors or actresses in this movie. So, like zero for zero right now.
I didn't know her. I only knew like the woman with the mouth, Leanne, and right. I knew James Remar because he's still acting, and you can almost recognize him through his voice, but I didn't recognize Deborah at all. I'm just looking on IMDb, right? And you could tell the actors that have had long careers because they use their most current photograph. So when you look on IMDb, you see a lot of these actors, they have like they appear in The Warriors. But then when you look at James Remar or Deborah Van Valkenburgh, they're current age, right? It's like, oh, so they're still acting. So what have they been acting in? So when I started looking her up, I was like, oh, she was an eight is enough. So I was just doing some research.
Okay. I gotcha. I appreciate that. But now we get into this other thing now where we have when the Warriors arrive on the 96th Street and Broadway station in Manhattan, they are separated when they are chased by the numerous patrolling cops who are trying to round up all the gangs around the Rumble in the Bronx, Vermin, Cochise and Rembrandt make the train to Union Square. Fox is seen with Mercy running to catch up with the others. He is then tackled by the police officer and is struggling to escape, but can't. Instead, he tells Mercy to go on without him. Mercy runs to catch up, but then goes to the Union Square with the police claiming they are looking for a female in a pink top. Fox is seen again struggling with the cop, but the cop notices a train is coming, so he then throws Fox in the tracks. The train then runs him over. Swan, Ajax, Snow, and Cowboy run outside where the rival gangs, the Baseball Furies, lay in wait for them. The gang chases the four into the Riverside Park where the fight ensures with the Warriors victorious over the Baseball Furies. So what I want to talk about is this, okay? So we have the subway scene, like we were mentioning, and I actually put this to music. First, it was going to be the Scooby-Doo song that I put to this, and then I got copyright claim. I'm like, okay. So then after that, I did the Mentos commercial for this one, and that one actually stuck. But, you know, it's just comical to see them try to escape them, to escape the cops that are trying to arrest them. And it's just like a Ring Around the Rosie thing for like the first 10 minutes. And there's no music at all to this either.
Right.
So you have that realistic thing of the fact that these cops are after these gang members. So I like the realism of that. And then you see the cop wind up throwing one of the other gang members into the tracks. But nobody even acknowledges the fact that one of their gang members died, which I find kind of weird. Like, I'm like, dude, you just lost a gang member. Nobody's even questioning where he's at or anything.
I don't think anybody ever saw it. That because I think the other gang members had scattered by the time that that happened. Like Marcy had already run away. So I don't even think they knew that he had gotten killed. And he's the one guy who saw the actual murder of Cyrus. He saw who did it, who had the gun, who had the smoking weapon. So that was wild. But that also kind of struck me too, how nobody had acknowledged it, but it's, at the same time, I don't think anybody ever saw it. So I can see why it wasn't acknowledged, but nobody asked about him. That's the problem. Nobody right. asked, where's Fox? Where'd he go? Anybody seen him? Nobody talked about him after they got to the beach or anything. They talked about some of the other people. Like they talked about what happened to Ajax. They talked about what happened to the first warlord, but they didn't talk about what happened to Fox. He just, once he disappears from the movie, it's like people forgot that he existed.
Exactly. It's like, well, didn't we have another guy? Yeah, we did. But where is he? I don't know.
That's definitely a problem with the writing.
Right. Because even though that's the issue, the small little nitpick I have is the fact that you are a gang members. You're friends with these your own gang members, but you don't recognize that one of your gang members is missing. That was like the small little nitpick of that. And I was like, I wish they would have actually gave us a little bit more on it. It's like, okay, yeah. We're missing Fox. Where's Fox at? So either he got arrested, got killed, or something to where we make... Because here's the thing. It made him feel like he was just an afterthought, like a one-note character, which I wish they would have actually expanded more on the idea of like, oh, shit, we're missing our gang member. We have to figure out... Let's have a moment of silence or something for Fox or something.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, actually, Fox was pivotal. Wasn't he the same one that was... he was doing negotiation, or was that somebody else? I thought that was Fox.
Yeah, that was Fox that was doing the negotiation. Yeah.
So you could tell Fox is some guy... Fox is the type of guy that has some savvy about him. You know, he's a very good negotiator because he knows how to communicate with people. But it's kind of messed up they didn't acknowledge that he was missing.
Exactly. That was one of the issues I had. But it's just a small issue. But at the same time, it's like, I understand that you have to try and survive this night. But at the same time, though, you need all your members together. So, yeah. That's just one little nitpick, guys. Okay. But now you have this scene with Mercy as well. And they know that they're looking for someone with a pink top. And so now we have Ajax, Snow, and Cowboy run outside and they run into the baseball Furies.
They were comical. That's all I was just thinking about that when you mentioned their name. Because like they're the most comical gang in the whole movie. It's between them and the mimes, but the mimes weren't really featured, and nor were the pimps. Like this was the most featured gang that had this obvious theme going on with how they want to be perceived. So that elevates them to the goofiest gang in the movie.
Yeah, I definitely can see that, especially with the makeup that they have on for the baseball Furies. And then, you know, I think that the fight choreography for this was really well done, though, too. Yeah, it can be corny. But at the same time, though, I like the whole fact that the Warriors were able to take them down with their own baseball bats. And then you have the two Warriors that are running and they're like, looks at the other gang member. He goes, look, man, I'm not going to be able to make it. I'm running out of breath. He goes, good. I'm tired of running away from these pansies. So they turn around. They start fighting and they take away the baseball bat. They started beating the other gang members with the baseball bat. Now they have a weapon in their hand now. Now they're able to defend themselves. So right. I like the fact that, you know, all this time they've been unarmed and now they have weapons to defend themselves because of the baseball Furies.
Right. The thing about Ajax is that he's calling everybody wimps. To him, everybody's a wimp or an F word or whatever.
Right.
But at least he can put his money where his mouth is. Like, yeah, he can fight for real, right? So he talks a big game, but he was really able to defend himself and his fellow gang members with when they had to fight the baseball Furies. And then even Swan had great leadership instincts when he split up the group while they were running, and then he circled back around to run behind the baseball Furies. So now the Furies are sandwiched between the Warriors, and even though there were more of the Furies and they had baseball bats, they were taken out by the Warriors, and that was fine. That it worked out pretty well. It looks pretty good, even though some of the Warriors couldn't fight. Like, you had Rembrandt had a really hard time, but right. But it was but that actually I don't think no Rembrandt wasn't with them. It would no, it was Cowboy. Cowboy
was with them.
That was yeah. He was with. He was with Ajax. Cowboy gets taken down, and it was really Ajax fighting by himself for a while, and then Swan and the other guy showed up and basically finished off the Baseball Furies. So that you are correct. That's very good. It was fairly decent fight choreography going on in that scene.
Right, because it could have been campy, right? Especially for the 1970s, you know? And this actually felt more realistic than some of the other stuff I've seen from the 70s and stuff as far as fight choreographies go.
Right. Yeah, it was pretty good.
But I want to back up for 1 second. You know how I talked about the fire on the tracks?
Yeah.
So my theory is this. I would think that's actually terrifying to know that there's fire on the tracks and that you're also being hunted down by these gangs to the point where you're stuck. There's nowhere to move, and you're stuck in this place with your people that you trust. But at the same time, though, it's that quietness and that eeriness of the fact that maybe one of the gang members probably set fire to the tracks, and it's just not coincidental. It's just, it could be coincidental, but it could not be coincidental. But in their minds as well, their whole entire anxiety is up. It's like, is this it for us? Are we going to die here on the way home? So yeah, I thought that was a little bit of a horrifying moment for them.
Yeah, they actually mentioned that. One of them says, we ought to be thinking about who set fire to the tracks, right? They don't think that it's an accident. They think somebody set fire to the track to try to stop them from getting to Coney Island. And it very well could have been that situation.
Which I like that they're playing the narrative of the fact that, you know, it could actually be the end of the line for them. And right. We don't know that even as an audience either, even though we have about an extra 30 minutes left out of this movie at this point. But at the same time, though, you're feeling just as fearful as they are. And they're also giving me anxiety as well. Yeah. This is also our first time seeing it.
Right.
So now we're arriving at the Union Square Station. Vermin, Cochise, and seduced by members of an all-female gang called Lizzie's. Back at the Lizzie's apartment, the women draw weapons to kill them, but the trio narrowly manages to escape again with only remnants, an arm badly cut by a Lizzie gang member, learning to the in the process that everyone believes they killed Cyrus. So right. Leaving the going ahead.
No, I was just saying that this scene had struck me as it's like, why are you hanging out with these girls? Like, what are you doing? It's like, you can't see that this is a trap. You really you don't know that this is a trap. Because at first, like, one of them, I forgot which one his name was, but he was like, where are your men at? Where are your men at? Your men should be here. And they were like, oh, they've gone to the big conclave meeting, so it's just us, and we just want to hang out with you. I was like, come on, dude. That's a trap.
Even and he said, like, right, go on ahead, Joe. So, sorry about that.
Now, I was just saying that, so one of them, Rembrandt, that you mentioned, one of the things about Rembrandt is that he bothered me the entire time, and I couldn't tell you why. I couldn't tell you until I did a deep dive on the actor that plays him, Marcelino Sanchez. So, because when he first up on the scene, he was like, why is this dude bothering me? But anyways, getting past that, I'll get back to Marcelino in a minute. But they go into the girls' hangout, and Rembrandt is not interested in the girls. And then it struck me, it's like, oh, Rembrandt does not like girls. It's not so much as that he thinks it's a trap. He's like, he don't like girls. He just don't like girls. and it's like, it's super obvious that he don't like girls. Like, he's not comfortable. He doesn't want to be touched by them. When they first go into that, when they talk to the girls for a few minutes, and then he gets right into one of his his gang brother's face, and he's like, can we go now? He's like Wanda from In Living Color. He's like, I'm ready to go.
He he's the only one that I could say is actually using some common sense, though, because of the fact he don't want to be near these women because they are up to no good. And all these other guys
No, I was just saying he's like that because he don't like girls anyway. So right. he's ready. That's the only reason that he's alert. Yeah. Like if he liked girls, then he'd probably be less. He wouldn't have his guard up, right? He would be less observant. But because he was uncomfortable, because he doesn't like girls, he was way more observant than everybody else was. And then he notices when something goes wrong, one of the girls pulls out a knife or something like that. And then he was like, they're packing. And then the girls start shooting. Thank God they cannot shoot for shit. Sorry for cursing, but they could not.
No. You're fine.
They could not shoot. They was like right there. It was like right in front of them. And he was like, they would have had better luck if they had started shooting with their eyes closed. That's how bad they were.
They were like the troopers from Star Wars. That's how bad they were at shooting.
Yeah, absolutely. Even worse. I think even the stormtroopers would have
at least there was a 50-50 shot that they would actually hit something in Star Wars. This one's right, like a zero right, out right. of zero.
Yeah, they're zero out of zero. So getting back to the actor Marcelino, so I'm wondering why he's bugging me, right? So I start digging into his IMDb, and what happened was the feeling that I felt was recognition because I recognize him, but the feeling didn't feel like recognition. It felt like discomfort. But then when I dug into his IMDb, I found out that he was on a show called 321 Contact. And on 321 Contact, there's another show. There's like a skit that they do called The Bloodhound Gang. And he was one of the detectives on The Bloodhound Gang. I used to watch that show all the time. I used to be obsessed with that show. And I used to love The Bloodhound Gang. It's this three or four kids, and they're solving mysteries. They work at this detective agency, and the name of the detective is Mr. Bloodhound, but he's never there on the show. You never see Mr. Bloodhound. You just see these kids, and they go around, and people come to them for help, and they go around solving mysteries. And he was one of those kids, and that's why he made me uncomfortable.
I gotcha. But, you know, the thing that I have to say, too, with the scene is like, even whenever they go up to the girls and everything, there's no men around. There's only them. Like you said, it's a trap. It's like the Star Wars character. It's a trap. And, you know, they're like, girls like you should have men around you. And that should give them a clue of like, no men. Wait, it's not even a Monday. It's only a Tuesday. I'm just using an example. But I'm like, yeah, I wouldn't be caught with these girls at all. They look very dangerous to me, to the point it's like, you know what? I'm good. You guys do you. We do us. We're on our way to probably going home, or we're going to wind up dead. But they wind up locking them inside the place and everything, and it goes awry. And, you know, I think that scene alone is like, you know what? You shouldn't even been trusting these women from the very beginning.
But, right. So I was just saying the thing is that your life is in danger. You're trying to get home. You got to hook up with the other gang brothers, but they kind of lost their head in that. And that was part of the lesson I was telling you. These women are dangerous. That's the lesson.
Yep, out in those streets. Yep. They want to do a side mission while they're on instead of being on the main mission. You know. Leaving the park, Ajax breaks from the group in order to make it with a woman. That's how I put it in my notes. And I park bitch. In spite of the other warnings, the woman is really an undercover police officer who handcuffs Ajax to the bench, and Ajax is arrested and taken to jail.
So, yeah. That another lesson. And it's like, there's a woman sitting alone on the bench. Dude, don't you recognize a trap when you see one? But nah, he think he's a big, tough guy. He's like, nah, I'm going to hang around here. And it's like, man, we should really be getting home. He's like, what are you? Are you the F word? I'm going to hang around. I'm going to do some exercise while I'm here. And then the woman is like, you could almost call it entrapment, because the woman is like, what you call it? She's enticing him. Like, ooh, you got big muscles. Ooh, you know, she's coming on to him, right? And so he could have, it could have been consensual, but he decided that he wanted to do it rough. I like it rough. And he's like being all rough with the woman. And then she, Finagles gets away from him. And then she locks him up with handcuffs against the park bench that they were sitting on. And now it's like, he's trying to get at her. He's dragging the park bench.
Yeah. While he's like, let me out of here.
Trying to get to her. But now you're caught. Now she's blowing her whistle. She's calling the cops. You're caught. You're dumb. You're so dumb.
Yes. They were telling this is like the world's dumbest criminals, if you think about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
If Cyrus was alive, he would be ashamed of you.
Yeah. And then the two other warriors, they come back, they try to to see what if he was gonna be all right. And he getting pinched by the cops. So no, he's not all right no more.
No, he's not. They wind up going back.
Yeah.
Because
I mean, like what else they gonna do?
Right. They can't do anything. But, you know, I like how they looked at him. It's like, you know what, man, we got to go back for Ajax. He was there. He got our backs and everything. We need to go back. And then it's like, okay, Ajax is on his own now. Peace.
Yeah, right. They'll visit him in jail.
But I feel like this is where it kind of slows down for me as the movie goes. Like, it seems like, yeah, we get into the women that they get locked in the room with, and it speeds up a little bit. This part right here kind of slows it down a little bit. The point where it's like, come on, I want to keep you guys keep on going and see if you guys survive this. But no, you keep on putting yourself in positions to where you will get killed. You know?
Right.
Either by the cops or by your own, by other gang members. And by then, they're going to be caught up to you.
Right.
I'm feeling kind of like, you know, being done with the Warriors at that point where he's hitting, where you have Ajax hitting on this woman or, you know, taking advantage of her. But I'm like, dude, you got what you deserve. You stopped right when you were supposed to. You just keep on going. Come on, one in the morning. You think this woman's going to be sitting down on the park bench at 1 a.m?
Yeah, that's kind of wild of him. He's like, it's time for us to show that the streets ain't safe at night. It's like, no, dude, don't be stupid. But she wasn't giving you the vibes that she was afraid of you, so, or that she was concerned for her safety. It's like, there was a point where the Warriors, they got on the subway, they're going home to Coney Island, and then there's a group of regular people. I think this is the only time you see regular civilians in the movie. They get on the train, they look at the Warriors, they're all nervous, and then they decide to get off the train, right? This woman didn't give you any sense that she was nervous or scared or concerned. It's like, that type of bravado should have given you a clue that maybe this woman was not ordinary, right?
Exactly. Especially whenever you see them with the cut from the Warriors, and these guys are, you know what I'm saying? These guys are someone that you don't want to be near or anything. And here comes these guys with in their prom outfits and stuff like that, and they're having a good time. And then this other, and then the Warriors are actually having a miserable time because they're having a hit on them. They've been through hell and back all night. You don't want to be on the same train with these guys. I don't blame them for wanting to get off on the next stop, but I wouldn't have even gotten on the train in the first stop that they made.
Right. So, yeah, you're absolutely correct.
But yeah, then we have Swan and makes it to the Union Station, but is simply tailed by members of the Punks. Mercy also arrives, followed by the remaining members of the Warriors, who regroup to lead the Punks into a nearby male public restroom, where Mercy says, "But I'm a woman," where another fight ensues. The Warriors hurt but victorious once again, with Swan also picking up a knife dropped by the Punks' leader, then catch the last train on their journey to Coney Island.
Yeah, that was a pretty good fight. The guy with the skates, he kind of threw me off because I thought they were fighting a gang of skaters, right? I thought it was like, oh, is there a skate gang? It's like, but no, it's not a skate gang. He was just a scout, and he just so happened to have an affection for skates. And and that, you know, he got together with his gang. They thought they was going to be the ones to take out the Warriors, but you know, they were not. You know, they got beat up, so that they were led into an ambush in the men's bathroom. So that worked out pretty good. And what's really neat about it is that after every time like somebody encounters the Warriors and the Warriors get away, there's a report on the radio, like DJ had mentioned, the gang that tried to get him and that the Warriors got away. And then there you see a scene with the oh, I forgot that the gang, Cyrus's gang, and you know how the leader is receiving reports of the progress of the warriors, right? So that's interspersed between all of the fights the warriors are having, and that's right. A fun aspect of the movie.
And with the baseball Furies, she also makes a comment about them, and it's kind of like, okay, well, they struck out against the Warriors. So now,
right.
So now we're on to the next team. Who's going to knock them out?
Yeah, right.
I really like that. But now we have the Rifts are visited by gang members who attended the earlier gathering, a witness to Luther firing the gun. Meanwhile, to the train, the Warriors gripe that Cyrus's plan was all a load of crap. When for clean cut types couples who are turning home from their senior prom, this is what we talked about already. They, of course, the date drops the corsage, leaving the train, and Swan gives it to Mercy. So when day breaks, the Warriors finally arrive home, but find Luther and the Rogues waiting for them, with Luther clinking the empty bottles on his fingers, intentionally drawing the words, "Warriors! Come out to play, eh?" The two gangs meet on the beach where Luther reveals he had no reason for killing Cyrus other than his own gratification. Swan suggests he and Luther fight a one-on-one duel. Luther, rejecting this, pulls his gun, but Swan quickly throws a knife into Luther's wrist, disarming him from the second he fires. Before more violence ensues, the Rifts arrive on the beach and acknowledge that they have been learned that the truth of Cyrus's murder. Massey, I think that's how you say his name. I'm sorry if I'm butchering it. It compliments the remaining warriors on their. How you say it?
No, I said it's good enough.
Yeah, good enough. You and I are bad about that, though.
It could be Massey or Massai.
Massai. You know what? I like Massai better. So Massai compliments the remaining warriors on their skills and let them go. The Rifts then swarm onto the doomed Rogues. The DJ makes her final appearance and informs everyone that the early reports were wrong. She announces that she is sorry for the warriors and that the only thing we can do is play you a song. She plays them Joe Walsh's In the City as Swan, Mercy, and the rest of the gang walk down the beach, illuminating by the sunrise.
One thing that we can't say is that Mercy earned her vest.
Yes. She definitely earned her vest. Now, this, I will have to say this. I think that what's his name is the most annoying character. I have to agree with my wife on this. You know, with Luther. With the Rogues, Luther, with the Luther.
Leader. Yeah. The leader of the Rogues. He had a very annoying voice. You really wish he would shut up. I don't. He's a bad person. So to boot.
Exactly. Kind of reminds me of Joe Pesci from The Casino, where they, you know what I'm saying? He just cannot shut up. He has to keep on getting himself in trouble after De Niro tells him not to be doing the things he's doing. So
But I did see Lethal Weapon. I think he makes his debut on Lethal Weapon 2. Leo gets. He never shuts up in that one. He was always getting in trouble. I feel you on that one.
Right, because that's what I feel like. I feel like he's the Leo Getz of the Warriors. Like, he doesn't know when to shut up. He winds up bringing a gun to they have a knife and a gun, and so it's the guy with the knife actually beat the guy with the gun, and he winds up. I like the little switchblade scene where you actually have that. And then there's that eeriness of whenever the car does pull up as well with the clinging of the bottles and stuff. And they're over there getting pipes to defend themselves. And it's only four or five of them out of the 30 people that's there, part of that gang member. And it's just something horrifying with it. But, you know, then you have everybody crowded around them. And this actually does remind, I know that you haven't seen Casino or anything, but whenever you do, there's that scene that reminds me of this, and it's when Joe Pesci and them are in the cornfield or something, and they wind up doing something to Joe Pesci. But that scene, when you know that he's dead, this dude is dead after all this time, of him plotting and conniving and being loud and obnoxious, his time's up.
Yeah. And then he didn't have any reason for doing what he did. He just did it because he felt like doing it. He's like, I just do stuff like that. Right? That was his whole rationale. It's like, you know, that could have been better written, but you know, it is what it is, right?
I agree, though. There should have been more motivation. It's like, what do you like that? I just like to stir shit up. That's all. I just like to stir shit up, and that's it.
I guess it's a kind of lack of satisfaction on my part, because on the one hand, you figure it could have been better written, but on the other hand, there are people that are like that. There are just horrible people. They just do horrible things for no reason at all. So on one point, you might say that it's poorly written. And on the other point, you could say that it's totally valid because it, you know, it's a real life thing that happens. And I might react by saying that it's poorly written because I don't like that we live in a world where people just do things just to do them with no rationale, no reason, no true motivation. And I shouldn't feel that way, because no real motivation would be satisfactory. Like, no, like there isn't a good reason that he can give for starting all of this chaos in the first place. So, you know,
that's true.
It's just, you just have to accept that some people are just purely evil and would just do things just to do them.
Exactly. And that's what I got from it, though, too. Even if it was written well, all you can say is, well, you're trying to take down this big guy known as Cyrus, and then guess what? I wanted to try and take over the gang, and then it goes into corruption within the gangs themselves, and there's no peacefulness within the gangs. There's more chaos and more streaking violence as well. So even if you have motivation behind it, you still have chaos within the gangs and the territories and stuff like that. So you're right. Within this whole entire movie, it's nothing but chaotic. But what did you think about the DJ making her final appearance and then leaving us with the last jam that she gives us with In the City?
Well, it's kind of funny because it's like, it's just that the way she said sorry about that, it struck a chord with me, because sometimes you make a horrible mistake and it's all you can do is say you're sorry. It's like, oh, sorry about that, here's a song, right?
Sorry about the misunderstanding. Let me play you a song for almost getting your asses killed.
right. I didn't mean to send the entire New York City gang affiliation against you. But now that it's done and most of you guys survived, you know, let's just let bygones be bygones and try to get along from here, right?
Exactly. That's what I got from it, though, too, man. It's like, my bad, guys. I didn't mean for that to happen. I'm sorry that you guys had a rough night, but tune for you. But I think that the director told them to just keep walking until we tell you to cut. So I think that's how they winded up cutting the final edit of it. It's like, just keep walking. When do we stop? Just keep walking. We'll tell you.
Right.
So that's, I like funny. It. So now that we actually dissected this movie with a modern day rating, where do you give this?
I think I would give this about a 5.
Okay.
There, I feel like there's, it's not a very well fleshed out movie. I mean, it's all right. It's the movie that's, you can watch to pass the time, but I felt like there's I don't know. I felt like there was something missing. There could have been a little bit of more of a narrative that could have been layered onto the movie. Some of the characters maybe could have been more fleshed out. Like Swan's character could have been explored a little bit more or something like that. Nowadays, and you know, when you watch a movie like this, you know, you get into their backstory and their background, and they have like a richer story or a richer backstory. But in this movie, you don't really get any of that, or any other layers other than the superficial look of the gang, right? So that's pretty much all you get.
Exactly.
But that's all you get. Right. But it's a little bit entertaining. So it's for me, it's about a 5.
Okay. I'm going to go at least a 4.5 out of 10, because here's the thing. I loved it. I liked it. I'm glad I got the chance to see this for the first time, and I'm glad I didn't know anything about it. Now I know where the references to the memes, like you said. I understand the John Wickisms within the movie itself and where they got the inspiration from it. And I can appreciate the movie and I can appreciate the inspiration from John Wick. But for me, it kind of slows down once you get into the park area to the point where it's like, okay, I'm ready for this thing to wrap up soon.
Because, yeah, right.
Because I'm getting tired of them hitting on every single woman that they see. I want to actually see them succeed, but at the same time, that those two scenes for me just slowed the pacing down to the point where it pulled me out a little bit. But other than that, though, I had a good time watching it. It's would I watch it again? I would probably put it on, like, if I'm trying to do my notes or anything like that for a show or something, I would definitely put it on for background noise and stuff, because it does get you amped up, especially with Cyrus's speech, "Can you dig it?" And I just want to scream back at him, "Yes, I can." But yeah, overall, I had a great time watching it. So yeah, 4.5 out of 10 for me. But yeah, that's everything here at Movie Lovers Unite. And also, too, go on and check out our Superman 1 and Superman 2 review that we did on the audio podcast as well. And don't forget to smash that like button, subscribe button, and all that other good stuff here at Movie Lovers Unite. And we'll catch you guys on the next one, guys. And please stay safe out there. Please don't run around like the Warriors and being absent-minded. And we'll catch you guys on the next one. Bye-bye.
Looking to buy your dream home or rent that perfect apartment? With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Set up your gotta-have-it wish list, and Redfin will send you real-time notifications for properties that match. And when you're ready to see it in person, scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Thinking about selling? Redfin can do that too. In fact, Redfin agents close twice as many deals as other agents, so they know how to get the best price for your home. And with a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin charges half of what others often charge. So you could save big, like really big. Last year, Redfin saved home sellers $118 million. So whether you're buying, renting, or selling, Redfin's ready to help you win. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.